Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TEL seminar, Secrets of Great Selling, with Gary Duncan and Liz Ryan. I'm Jackie Marinin, and I'm the Member Services Manager for Ask Liz Ryan, a career consulting firm based in Boulder, Colorado. You can find us online at www.askLizRyan.com. In this teleseminar, our host, Liz Ryan, will interview National Sales Training Guru, Gary Duncan, about the techniques and characteristics of great salespeople that everyone can learn and use to sell products, services, and ideas, from corporate people to consultants to job seekers. We're going to start in a moment, but right now I'd like to introduce our host, Liz Ryan. Liz Ryan is a former Fortune 500 Human Resources VP and an expert on the new millennium workplace. Liz is the workplace expert for Business Week Online, the savvy networker for Yahoo Hot Jobs, and a blogger for the Huffington Post. Liz is also the leader of the Ask Liz Ryan online community and the author of Happy About Online Networking, the virtually simple way to build professional relationships. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today, and I'd like to turn the mic over to Liz Ryan.
Thanks, Jackie, and thanks to everyone for coming on the call today. This is Liz, and I'm really glad that you were able to join us today because we have one of my favorite people on the call with us, and that's Gary Duncan of Leadership Connections. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Gary in just a second here, but from my experience, a lot of the folks on this call have been in one of our virtual seminars or one of our face-to-face seminars, and if you've been in one of those, you've probably heard me talk about Gary before. He's definitely a mentor to me, and he's the person that any little thing that I may know about selling, it came from Gary. So if you've heard me talk about pain and other kinds of sales ideas straight out of Leadership Connections and the training that I've been lucky enough to attend with Gary. So let me tell you a little bit about Gary Duncan, and then we will get into the interview. Here we go. Okay. Gary Duncan is the managing principal of Leadership Connections, a sales training firm, and he's a sales and management consultant and sales trainer who's been doing this for over 30 years. Gary's degree was in marketing, but he soon got involved in sales and was a top salesperson and sales manager for DuPont and Pfizer, where he sold and he hired and he managed and created sales teams, and then eventually became really an expert in the area of sales training and getting even non-selling type people to be expert salespeople by virtue of learning some techniques that Gary trains now in his business. He's worked extensively with entrepreneurs and Fortune 500 organizations and everything in between, winning a lot of honors and awards for best sales, market share, dollar increase in a number of different markets and product lines, including the designation as a heavy hitter while Gary was directing a Sandler sales training franchise. Right now, Gary is the president of Leadership Connections, consulting and training business focused on performance, growth, and management of sales teams. So, Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. I am so pleased to be here.
We are delighted to get your message out and help folks who may not really be experienced in sales or ever have thought necessarily of themselves as salespeople to be able to be competent and confident in a sales process. Okay.
Go ahead,
Gary.
No, I was going to say it's just such a great profession when it's done correctly.
Well, you know, that's funny you say that because a lot of people don't think that, do they?
No, they don't.
What do we think about salespeople?
Well, you know, there's an image, I think, that's probably not the best. And that's because so many, all of us, myself included, we have many more experiences buying, and that's not probably the best representation of how selling should be done, because we're working primarily in business sales, which is a lot different than retail.
Okay, so you say most of us, like us regular civilians walking around, we have more experience as buyers than we do selling.
Right. And so we take those negative experiences and those negative interactions and we transfer them to what we think selling is about.
Okay. All right. And when we have these stereotypes, negative stereotypes of bad salespeople, pushy salespeople, or what have you.
Exactly.
Okay. So just to get us started here, Gary, what would you consider the most common mistakes that salespeople make?
Well, I would have to say that I really think there's two major ones, and that is selling too soon and talking too much. And maybe they go together, but I think people get too excited and they start their sales process way too soon. And I think we could add into that not reading the body language of the prospect. I can't tell you how many times I've seen the eyes of the prospect start to glaze over and the salesperson never notices.
Yeah. And so what do they do when they don't notice?
Well, they look for excuses to get away. It's difficult to get the second appointment. You don't get invited back.
Right.
And you experience all the stalls you can imagine.
Yeah. And stalls. I mean, stalls, right? This is every salesperson's greatest fear. And the reason I'm so tuned in, I think, and interested in this idea of stalls is because this is what happens to people on a job search. Exact same thing.
Yes. Probably because they didn't do the correct diagnosis in the beginning.
Right. Right, right. Now, when you say diagnosis, can you help us understand what you mean by that?
Well, I think selling is all about meeting the needs of the customer and really understanding their needs. The problem is that the customer doesn't always clearly understand what they need. And so rather than just pitching, doing the diagnosis first.
Okay. So just to dig into this topic a little bit more, because I think this is so critical, and it's absolutely critical also, in my view anyway, for job seekers, people don't know what they need. So if you're going to see somebody and you have an idea that they, have a particular requirement in mind and you want to test that, how do you do that?
Well, the simple answer is you do it with questions. I think we are in the information age, and customers expect you to have a good understanding of their business before you walk in the door, especially in larger, major sales. So doing the research and being prepared with the right questions. And I might add, you might not know the exact problem, but you should be able to get close enough to create a credible conversation.
Right, right. So you're going to be in the ballpark.
Yes.
Which means you have to study.
You do have to study, and you do have to do your homework. You really
do. Now, even before we think about, digging in and getting at that need and the pain and all of that, just the physical act of making a sales call or picking up the phone and making a sales call is absolutely, terrifying to a huge percentage of the population. They just can't do it. They don't want to do it. What advice would you give those people?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, people get terrified because they are afraid of messing the call up or losing the deal. But they have to first remember that they don't have the deal, so there's really nothing to lose.
Ooh.
And generally, first calls are really not about selling. They're really about having conversations and gathering information and building rapport. I guess a simple way to say that was they're about, qualifying people.
Yes.
But I think there's a couple things you can do, Liz, is one, you have to get centered. And I like to say get your head on straight. That means take some deep breaths physically, stand up, clear your mind of the negative self-talk, and relive a positive experience in your past before you walk in the door, before you pick up that phone.
I like that. So you're giving yourself a little bit of confidence.
Absolutely. Just get yourself back into a place where you've been confident and successful before. And that's an anchor, and it works very well. And I might add to that, the second thing would be to really have some good questions that would engage the prospect prepared. Because the sooner you can get the customer or the prospect engage with a question, the more comfortable they're going to be and more comfortable you're going to be.
Interesting. You know, for job seekers, I like to say that that very stilted, horrible interview style we're all used to, where we sit there like a little mouse and they ask us questions and we answer,
yeah,
isn't really comfortable for anybody. You know, nobody likes to read from, most people don't like to read from script. And maybe we can shift that. And certainly in a sales call, I got to believe it's even more so. You know, people don't like to sit there and ask you questions about your product. They want to be in a dialogue. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 200% I would agree with that. I think, in fact, I have had salespeople that I've had them walk in with a piece of paper with questions on it, and I teach them sometimes to say to the prospect, I had some questions that were so important I didn't want to forget, so I wrote them down. What a compliment to the prospect. And I would guess that might be the same in an interview.
Yeah, that's good. So you obviously teach a lot of stuff, but one of the things that I've really gotten from your program is a process, a really simple process that salespeople can follow to manage their way through a sales call. Would you be able to share a little bit of that with us?
I would be happy to. I think if we talk about the process, of course, the first thing that great sellers do is they are master prospectors. They know how to find new opportunities, and they do it consistently. And when they do that, a couple things happen. They get stronger, and they remain more confident and become less fearful on the calls because they're not so desperate to salvage that one deal. So that would be the first part of the sales process to really master, is learn how to initiate new contacts and keep the funnel working pretty full. I think the second thing great salespeople do is they really know how to identify, separate the chaff from the wheat. I see too many talented people spend way too much time with low-end or unqualified buyers. Great sellers don't hesitate to walk away from poor opportunities, and so they excel in doing three things in my mind. They gain evidence of the need. They do a great job qualifying for the decision maker and the decision process, and they know how to identify and talk about money early in the sales process.
Oh, come on. You're going to have to tell us how to do that.
Which one?
The money one, the money part. How do you get to talking about money?
Well, I think there's I think the biggest mistake people make in talking about money is they talk about it too soon or they talk about it too late. Really, the best time is after you understand their needs and before you go to all the trouble of preparing a presentation or a proposal. And you can do some small negotiation at the end, but at least get in the ballpark. It doesn't matter how good your solution is or how good your presentation is. If the customer or the prospect is unable or unwilling to make the investment that you're asking them to do, it doesn't matter. So talking about it and giving ranges of what you suspect the solution is going to be in dollars in investment, the range, is an easy way to get the customer into a ballpark number before you do the proposal.
Before you waste the time. Yeah. And that's a 100% portable over to the job search arena, too. People want a huge PowerPoint, come in, present to our team. Well, what are we talking about money-wise here? Gary, could we do a little role play on this?
Sure.
I'll be the customer, right? And let's say I'm buying, what am I buying, sales training?
Okay.
Okay, I'm buying sales training. And so you're going to introduce money as a little demo for our listeners. Does that sound okay?
Sure. Now, this is assuming, go ahead.
No, you tell me all the assumptions, and I'll play along.
Well, I just want to assume that I understand your need, and two, you are the decision maker.
I'm the decision maker.
Okay.
Yep, there's nobody else. There's no trapdoors in this. So, Gary, I'm very glad that you're here. That was a fantastic description you just gave me, and I must say you pretty much nailed our need. You must have seen situations like this before.
Yes, you're not alone.
And so I think, you know, definitely your service is one of the ones that we're going to consider very seriously. I guess the next thing would be to have you come back and present to our rest of our team. I mean, it's my decision, but I want to get their input.
Well, certainly, and maybe we can talk about that in a little bit more detail. But before we do, I want to make sure that I'm in the ballpark on what you're hoping to invest. You sound like you've given considerable thought to this project. So do you mind sharing with me in round numbers what kind of investment you're hoping to make to solve this issue?
Oh, boy, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it? I mean, you know, I guess the less the better.
Well, of course, that would be value. So do you have you established a budget yet?
Well, you know, yes and no. I mean, it's going to depend on whether we end up with more of a Cadillac solution or more of a Kia. But I think, you know, we've probably got about $15,000 to spend on this.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for sharing that. When I work up solutions, and I'd have to put a pencil to this so we can go through them in more detail, but we can offer you solutions in the range of $10,000 to $15,000 if you want some of the other things that we've touched on. You're probably looking at an investment of maybe $15,000 to $25,000. And I'm not saying that you want those, but assuming you did, would it be feasible for your organization to make a larger investment?
Ooh, Gary Duncan, I like that. Luckily, this is being recorded, so we're going to have this for posterity. Okay, so she laid it out. And you said, yeah, that's what you get a can of tuna fish for that, so that's fine. If that's what you want, we got the tuna. However, what I heard you say is that you want this, and that's going to cost a little bit more. Very nice. Very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So moving on a little bit, we have this idea of the process, which is fantastic. What is the very first thing a newbie salesperson should learn or do for themselves?
Well, I think, you know, a newbie or a novice, there's really two things. First, they really have to learn as much as possible about their service, their offerings, their products, and their competitors in their industry. And equally important, then, they need that for the confidence. But the second part of that is they should avoid telling it all. Newbies want to tell everything they knew.
Yes.
But they need the information for their confidence. Once they get that, I would tell them to identify all the problems and that their service or product can resolve, and then look for people with those problems.
Yes. It's fascinating you're saying this, because we have a lot of folks on the call today who are in an online course with us called Build Your Personal Brand, and we're asking them to think about in that course, what is the problem you solve?
Great.
Which is different than, I have this number of years of experience and I have these degrees and I worked for these blue chip companies, but what is the problem that you solve gets closer, I think, to this idea of, you know, what is the need out there?
Oh, absolutely. If I might share a very brief story, I have a friend who is a consultant, and so, of course, consultants are, we're always looking for a job, so I can certainly identify with your clients. But he read about a merger or an acquisition a company made in Kansas City. So he contacted them, and basically he said something to the effect, I don't know the exact words, but he said, you know, often when two cultures try to merge, there's major communication issues and power struggles. I don't suppose that's something that's happening to you. And, of course, you know, she got hired. Yeah,
well, look at that. Okay, I don't suppose that's happening to you, because we don't want to diss them and say, oh, you're absolutely dealing with this problem, right? That's presumptuous.
Right. People hate to be told what their problems are.
Right. So you go the opposite direction and you say, but you guys probably don't have that.
That's right. But he knew through his research what was occurring. And
yeah.
So it was easy to engage the prospect.
Wow. I love that. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, we're so trained, right? We're so brainwashed in some of these unfortunate old school sales techniques, like here's what you need. I know what you need. I'm walking in the door from outside. I don't even work here. But I know what's wrong. Yeah, it's obnoxious. We hate it when people do that. It's like those spammers that write to you and they say your website should be getting a lot more traffic, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes.
You don't know what the heck you're doing. I know I don't know what I'm doing. What are you going to rub it in?
Yeah.
You're not getting my business.
Not the way to build rapport.
Not the way to build rapport. Okay. Well, we have three hot topics that folks have asked, knowing that you were going to be coming on with us today, which is a wonderful gift, that they've asked to hear a little bit more about. And these, of course, are the big three danger zones, starting with cold calling. So you mentioned before that cold calling, you know, is perhaps not as scary as it's, you know, spoken of to be, as it's described to be. Could you give us a tip on cold calling?
Well, I think we run a one-day prospecting workshop just on how to make a telephone call. But the short answer
is that coming up? Is one of those coming up?
Well, actually, we do have one coming up August 12th.
Okay.
And we do it once a quarter. You can just check our website. But I would say on cold calling, people get confused on the purpose. The purpose of a cold call is really two things. One, start building a relationship. And two, to qualify, to find out from the prospect's perspective, finding one thing that's important to them to talk about. You know, I get a lot of calls, and I'll take just about anyone who calls me. If they call and start a pitch, we're pretty much done. But if they call and ask questions and engage me in a conversation, I'll talk to them. And I think great sellers who do good at cold calling are the ones that know how to call a prospect, gain permission to talk, and then they ask good questions and they get the prospect engaged.
Yeah,
it's
fantastic.
A conversation. It's not a sales pitch.
It's a conversation. You feel like role-playing one of these for folks?
I'm sorry?
Do you feel like doing one right now?
Oh, cold call?
You want to?
Sure.
If I'm the person at the... Who am I? Who am I as I sit at my desk?
Oh, I don't know. You're the vice president of sales of a widget company.
Okay.
Right.
And my name is going to be, I'm going to have my name be, Madeline Albright. Okay.
Madeline, okay.
Madeline, okay. Ring! Madeline Albright.
Hi, Madeline.
Hello.
Hi, Madeline.
Yes, this is Madeline.
It's Gary. We haven't spoken before. Can I tell you why I'm calling?
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Madeline, it sounds like I got you at a bad time. Are you in a meeting?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was just, someone was leaving my office and someone was trying to come in. Forgive me. Please, tell me more.
Oh, okay. I'm over here at Leadership Connections, and when I talk to owners like yourself about their revenue and their sales team, they tell me they have two or three very common challenges. One problem is that they don't have enough new prospects, and the second problem is that people tend to get a lot of pressure on price in this environment. Are any of those occurring in your world?
Yes. They. I would say both of those are not unfamiliar to me.
Would you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, it's just what you said. I mean, it's all about price right now. My guys are pretty much getting beat up even by long-term customers. And then, you know, it's a very tough environment to open new customers.
If I had some solutions for that, would you be willing to invest a few minutes with me so we could talk about those?
Sure. I mean, what's a few minutes? 15 minutes?
15 to 30 minutes?
Yeah, I'd say sure.
Okay. What day are you looking at?
Oh, how about a week from Thursday?
Okay, do I write this in pen or pencil?
How about mechanical pencil, Gary?
It sounds like you. It might not be the best time.
Oh, it is. It's just, you know, I'll tell you what it is. Obviously, I've had calls from sales trainers before,
uh-huh.
and I've been burned one time, and I had egg on my face in front of my CEO.
How's that?
Well, you know, we spent like $45,000 on this sales training thing, and we got a little uptick, but it was more of that glow that you get coming out of, you know, sales training,
yeah.
more so than anything really fundamental in the team's approach. And I guess I'm still a little bit bruised from that experience.
I wouldn't blame you at all. I would be cautious if I were you as well. However, I'm not asking you for $45,000. Let's just figure out if you like some of the options that we might be able to provide, and then we can talk about how you would get comfortable knowing that we will perform in the way you would hope.
All right. Can I ask you a favor, though?
Sure.
Can we meet somewhere? Can we meet at a coffee shop around the corner? I don't really want the receptionist and the whole team here to be like, oh, here goes Madeline with the sales training again.
I would be happy to do that. Do you have a favorite place?
Yeah, I just go to Pete's Coffee, 16th Street Mall.
15th Street Mall.
Yep.
Would you prefer to come to our office?
Sure, that's a good idea. I'll come to your office. You have coffee?
Yes.
Okay.
Like.
I like. All right. Yay! Fantastic. Okay. Thank you, Gary.
Oh, you're welcome.
I bet you're just that cool in a real-life cold call, too, aren't you?
Well, you make enough of them, you do get comfortable. And it's interesting. If you sound and feel comfortable, the prospect is comfortable talking to you. There's just this thing that if you're tense and uptight, they can pick it up, and they get tense and uptight.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, the people who call you who have a comfortable conversational tonality are the ones that you enjoy talking to. So
you
get
enjoy
rid of the business voice.
Yeah, the business voice. No, you better tell us about the business voice, because this sounds like the kind of stuff we talk about in resumes. What's the business voice?
Oh, you know, it's the radio voice. It's the uptight, the formal. You know, your voice tightens up. It gets higher or it gets deeper, and it becomes rigid. Instead of just
yeah.
comfortable and conversational.
Yeah. And in terms of the words, are there particular words that go along with that business voice?
Well, I think there are certain words that sellers use that just trigger the red flags, and the red bells and whistles start going off. It's very common for sellers to say, yes, this is Gary with Leadership Connections. Well, the only people who say that are sellers. I am with.
Oh, interesting. I am with.
Yes.
So how do you do it? What's the right way to do it?
Well, I prefer to just say, hi, it's Gary. I'm over here in Lakewood. Because they don't really know, and they don't really care who you're with until you
yeah.
get to something that's important to them.
Interesting. Now, what if there's a receptionist doing gatekeeping stuff, and he or she says, who are you with?
I'm here with Rhonda, who's my assistant, and I ask another question. Is this a bad time? And
I'm here with Rhonda. Is this a bad time? I love that. That's
great. And they don't know what to do with that.
They don't know what to do.
Yeah.
It blows their circuits.
Well, if you
they don't have
like
a script
everyone,
for that.
Yeah, they don't. They're on automatic pilot. They ask three questions. We answer them. And then they say, I'm sorry, he's busy or she's busy. The trick is just, see, to me, because I'm not calling to sell anything, that question makes no sense.
Right.
That only makes sense to sellers. I'm calling to qualify and get information. So
right.
I can honestly say, I'm here by myself or I'm here with Rhonda. Is this a bad time?
So you're interpreting the question, who are you with, as a literal question, who are you physically with?
Yes.
Love that. You know, I think any time you change the script, it's a good thing, don't you?
I do, too. I just know that if you sound, smell, and taste like everyone else, you're going to be treated that way.
Oh, I want you to say that again.
I think that would be true in the job search, true, right?
If you sound, smell, taste like everyone else, they're not going to pay attention to you. There's no safety in numbers in this stuff.
No, there is not. You want to be unique.
You want to be unique. I immediately think of lemmings going over a cliff.
Yep.
Yeah. You can't. You've got to be yourself, human. Okay, let's go on to our next hot-button issue, and that is surmounting objections. They throw an objection at you, but X. What do you do then?
Well, I think there's two-part answer to that. I think, first of all, we probably give them a lot of the objections that we hear by giving them too much or too much irrelevant information too soon. So the best technique is to give them an exact solution to their issues, and that will help eliminate a lot of them. The second part of those, though, when you do get an objection, it's hard to determine whether it's a real objection or it's a stall in the guise of an objection. So rather than jumping on answering it, I think it's much more important to really understand the objection and clarify the objection. So studies have shown that most people don't give you the real reason the first time. It's if you can picture an onion and peeling down the layers. So just clarifying the objection, tell me more, sounds like you've had a bad experience, and getting the customer to talk around that. What I want to happen on an objection is to answer the real objection, not the one they're telling you.
Oh, so what they throw out as an objection may very well not really be what's holding them back.
No, may not be. May not be. For example, well, your price was too high. Well, my goodness, if we've done our job correctly in qualifying for their budget, that shouldn't be the issue. But what they're really saying a lot of times when they say your price is too high, sometimes they're just reporting, you know, they still like your product and they still want it. It's just high compared to the competitors. Or they don't know what else to say, and it's easier to say that than it is I like your competitor's product better.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, your price is too high, which means can you tell me more about that, and I would try to get them to open up so that I could get to the real reason.
Huh. Okay, do you want to role play this one?
Sure.
Okay. Gary, it sounds great, but I think the price is a little high.
I understand that it is a very significant investment. What were you hoping the investment would be?
Well, I think we were looking for something about 20% lower.
Okay. Isn't that your ultimate budget?
I don't know if we have an ultimate budget, but it's just we got three bids, and yours was the highest by about 20%.
That's not surprising, and I apologize. I should have prepared you for that. We normally are competitive, but we're rarely not the lowest. Could I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Why do you suppose our prices are higher and so many of our clients are willing to pay us more than our competitors?
Ooh. Oh. I'm sorry. I fell out of the script.
That's all right.
Why do you suppose if our prices are higher, people are willing to pay us? Interesting.
Because I want to find what's important to the customer. It doesn't matter what I think.
Yes. It doesn't matter what you think, yeah. If we had gone in that direction, I was going to say that one of them was a guy with a truck, sales training truck, parked right outside called Sales Training R Us, and they're a mobile sales training. not to diss. They're all new business models are worth, you know. But
are you serious? Is there a truck?
No, there's no truck. I just made that up. That'll be your next business, the truck. You can have tacos and sales training.
Exactly.
Okay, fantastic. So you're asking questions almost all the time.
Absolutely.
You're not preaching to people. When do you get to do the big whiz-bang, here's how it slices and dices, and you buy two, you get a free Ginsu knife? When does that come in?
Well, I think there is a time that you do have to present sometimes. But a lot of times, if you do the need analysis correctly, you will hear things like the customer saying, can you help us with this? Can you fix it? How do we get started?
And yeah.
I mean, that does happen. But in the presentation, if you are clear on the needs and you have agreement to give you a decision and you know who the decision makers are and what the process is, and you're in the ballpark on the budget, I would do a presentation. And I would only do the presentation, I would divide it into segments by need. So I would take their first and most important need, and I would address that. And then I would go through the presentation that way, because it's much easier to divide and conquer and get many decisions than it is one large decision.
Okay. So you're not trying to mix two or three different needs in one conversation?
Absolutely not. It makes it too difficult for them to decide.
Okay. Because then they have like a point factor deal that they're going to try to put metrics behind and weighted average and all this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
You know, it's very interesting. So you are not looking as you go in and make your sales presentation or have that conversation to be the best in a field of candidates. You're looking to be the right solution for them.
Absolutely.
I think we're trained. Don't you think we're trained to say we're the best?
We are trained to be the best. And I think it's difficult for sellers that we are the best in some situations. We're not always the best solution for what the customer is looking for. And that goes back to what you asked earlier, what do great sellers do? Great sellers recognize that and they move on. I would think it would be the same in a job search, in that, you know, sometimes you find out about a position and it's not the right position.
Right. Right. And I think what you said about great salespeople being master prospectors, if they're always bringing irons into the fire, then they're not so emotionally attached to any one deal.
Well, that's exactly it. It is. If you notice, anyone who's been in sales, they probably have experienced getting a number of deals at one time. You know, they kind of get on a roll, and then they'll get, they'll get in a slump. And the reason they get in a slump is because they lose their confidence, because their funnel gets too thin. And that's why they come in waves, is because when you make a sale, that's when you're the strongest. And I had a mentor one time, and he said, when you make a sale, you can't go home. You got to make some more calls, because that's when you're hot. And that's exactly true.
Yes, absolutely. So then, what I hear you saying is that our job in a sales call or at a sales meeting is not really to please the client so much and make them like us as it is to really diagnose what's going on there and whether we're the right fit.
Absolutely. I think it's easy to confuse being liked with real trust. And granted, there has to be some kind of likability factor or rapport factor to engage the prospect. But look, I know people I really like, but I don't want to do business with them. And I have clients that I really don't want to spend the weekend with, but we trust each other and we do a lot of business together. So there's a difference between being liked and being true trust. If I can get both, great. But don't confuse, don't make likability the most important thing.
When I used to be a corporate HR person for 10 million years, and of course my last name is Ryan, which is a very generic Irish name, and usually, at least in Chicago, people immediately go to Catholic. You can't believe how many salespeople would come in and see me, you know, whether they're selling mailroom equipment or 401k administrator, whatever it is, and they would say, so, Liz Ryan, you probably go to St. A's over there in Evanston. That was their opener, always. The church.
Yeah, the church.
They mentioned the church, like, and you know what? Are you going to go into a whole thing? Well, you know, I'm like one of these people that was brought up Catholic, but that, I mean, it's none of their business.
Yeah, no, it probably isn't. And I think almost everyone can probably think of times when they They've experienced bringing up a thread of commonality and gotten burned by it. I mean, and sometimes it works great, you know. We both went to see you. Well, that's great. And sometimes it helps us. Sometimes it backfires. You know, there's an old joke about the guy who went in and he said, you know, that's a great picture of your wife. And the guy said, that's not my wife. That's John Madden.
Ouch.
I know it's a bad joke, but it just emphasizes how careful you have to be. I think there are better ways to build rapport, like using communication models or NLP models.
Now, tell us what that is.
Well, most people are probably familiar with the DISC model, and the DISC model is, the dominant influencer or study relator or compliant. And there's different versions of it, but what it's saying is that different styles communicate differently, and likewise they buy differently. So if you're a dominant, you tend to want the bottom line. If you're an influencer, you tend to want a lot of interaction and small talk. If you're a study relator, you're more interested in security, and it's going to be a slower decision, and I would not talk new to them because they like proven. And the analytical is the guy or the lady who is the engineer or accountant who needs a lot more information. So recognizing your style and selling to them the way they want to buy creates comfort and rapport.
So way stronger than the church connection or the high school connection or something like that.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about these people falling across the spectrum of DISC, and do you do the DISC in your program?
We do a version of it, yes.
You do? Okay.
Go ahead. No, we do a sales style version, which most of our reports come out to be like 20 pages long, and it tells each individual, their sales style, their communication style, and then we take that. And it's like anything else. You learn your own style, then you recognize the differences in others and adapt accordingly.
Right. So when you talk about this DISC as a way of understanding a buyer's likely reactions, are we kind of, saying to a certain degree that the buying process has an emotional component?
Oh, absolutely. It is all emotional. In fact, Liz, I get so excited about this because there are actual medical studies now showing that the old brain lights up in tests when it's making a buying decision. Now, you don't need medical equipment to take in with your sales call, but just think of it this way. People will remember how they felt interacting with you long after they've forgotten the words that you said to them.
Ah, right. I thought you were going to say long after the product starts working and goes out of warranty.
Well, that's probably true, too, as well.
But that is so true. I mean, you remember the emotional component of relationships going back to fifth grade.
Oh, you do?
More than what you guys actually said to each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's got to be the right experience, and they have to feel good, so it's an emotional experience. Now, they will use their intellectual right brain or left brain to justify the decision, but it is physiologically proven buying is emotional.
Even B2B?
Even B2B, absolutely.
So you come in and you talk to me and I'm looking in your eyes and I trust that you get me.
Yes.
And I believe because you get me so well that you're going to take care of me.
Exactly. See, real trust comes from two things. Of course, character, which reveals itself over time, but competency. How could I trust you're going to help me when I'm not comfortable that you even understand my situation?
Right. Or care.
Or care. Exactly.
Because you're coming ready to just go into your dog and pony show and blah, 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 and I could be nothing. I could just be a toad sitting here in the chair.
You could be. Yeah, absolutely. We know that's not true, but you could be.
So it's the idea that even though you're this very sophisticated buyer and it's all very cut and dried, and it's very businessy and professional, it's still a human need to be heard.
Absolutely. It's a human need to be heard. If you're the only person with the solution, they might buy in spite of you. But I don't know of any of those situations that exist.
So you have to be humble enough to say, I think I have an idea what might be going on, but I certainly wouldn't want to say I know for sure. Why don't you tell me?
No, exactly. That would be well said. You can suggest and you can ask questions around it. But the customer has to admit and take ownership of their situation. Otherwise, they'll go into denial at the end of your sales process. But you can certainly direct that conversation.
And how do you direct it?
Well, you know, with your questions and your expertise around the likely problems they're having and, you know, the questions around problems that would be created as a differentiator between you and your competition.
Okay. So just our last little mini role play, if you don't mind. I say, well, it's so great that you came in. You know, it's interesting, though. We don't have any problems in our sales team.
Well, you're very fortunate, and I wish all my clients were in that same position that you're in. Do you mind sharing with me what you're doing to help you make your team so successful?
I don't know. I guess I'm just a really good manager. You know, I don't know. They're just a really good team. I guess I've just hired good people.
Well, that is the key. You've got to have a strong foundation. So you're not having any turnover at all.
Really? Like 2% a year?
That's pretty low. That is exceptional. Is your market share where you want it to be?
Well, I mean, whose market share is where they want it to be? You know, it's good enough.
What does that mean?
I mean, you know, my boss is happy with me.
Well, I'm sure. Absolutely. You sound like a great, a terrific manager with that kind of turnover. I don't suppose it would be something you would want to look into, how you could increase that and have him like you even more.
Ooh. Oh. Well, we could role play all day. That was fantastic, Gary. Now, I just want to mention for the folks who are listening, I did not ask Gary to prepare any of this, and I apologize to you, Gary, for throwing you into the furnace three or four times here, but this is you're the master at this stuff, so
well, you made
I don't worry
easy.
About it.
I appreciate that. You made it easy. You were an easy prospect.
Oh, okay. Okay. So now, if we, just in our last few minutes here, could get off of the sort of professional sales and into these folks, and I know we have them on the call today who are not salespeople in any stretch, hasn't, you know, been part of their job in any formal way, but they still have to sell ideas. They got to sell ideas upstream to their own manager or leadership team, or they have to sell ideas in their consulting. What is your advice for those folks?
Well, I think my advice is the same it would be for my salespeople, because I don't want my salespeople looking like the traditional stereotyped image that so many people have in their mind. So I don't think the process is any different. I think the first step when they have to sell an idea upstream or even downstream is to have a good conversation and get buy-in on why what the issues are now without the solution or without the idea. And people do buy for different reasons, but the three main categories are they buy to solve a problem, they buy out of fear, and they will buy out of gain. They see some advantage down the line. But if I have a coffee cup with a handle and you're trying to sell it to me because I would not burn my hand, I'm not going to buy that because I don't like coffee handles. I like round cups that I can put in my car. So you would have to find a different reason that was important to me to sell me that coffee cup. So it's the same thing going up or down the food chain within an organization. Find out what the problems are and how you can fix that problem. They'll be much more receptive to your idea.
Okay. So your idea may be your favorite brainchild ever, But if it isn't relevant to the, for example, your boss's set of priorities, don't expect them to get excited about it.
That would be exactly right.
Now, we have a few more minutes, and we have some questions that folks have suggested. And what you can do with this, to our guests on the call, there's a little chat feature down at the bottom of the dashboard page on cauliflower.com, and you can type a question in there. And a couple of folks have done that, and I'm going to read those questions now, Gary, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Okay. How do you handle it if your competition is internal staff? So you're an outsider, and their internal staff, they want to do it for themselves. You know you can do it better, and they probably don't realize how much time and what skills are needed.
Well, I think I understand the question. So if I don't answer this, please re-ask it. But I think it's a moot point to try to sell that solution unless you can create enough pain around the time and energy it takes for them to do it themselves. So I would be focusing less on the product or the service differences, and I would be focusing more on the internal costs and downtime and disruption, that kind of thing, because if you can get enough pain around that, you have an edge.
Okay. So you're comparing your solution to the solution they sort of are leaning toward, which is we're going to do it ourselves in our imaginary life at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's
well,
when it's going to happen.
Well, yeah. I think it more and more companies are outsourcing because it's more convenient and less disruptive to do things internally. So again, not so much comparing product to product or service to product, but comparing, creating the pain or the need around the internal distraction and lost time and the difficulty of doing it themselves.
Okay.
You know, a good analogy is that physicians take an oath and it's unethical for them to treat their own family as because they're emotionally involved. And it's the same in that type of situation. That might be an approach.
Oh, nice. Now, what about the problem that you can run into, Gary, where you are proposing something that, you know, is really forward-looking and it's going to get your prospect to the next level in their business, but they don't have a vision for that? You know, so when you ask them, well, what do you see happening in your business, they say, oh, well, we want to grow from $5 million in sales to $20 million in sales in 2 years. And you say, great, how are you going to get there? And they say, we don't know.
Well, that would be a pretty easy scenario to really develop a lot of pain around. But with a visionary, what you want to do is get them to describe in detail the picture of where they want to be, not necessarily how they're going to get there. But all you need is getting them to really own that picture of their vision in the future, and then you talk to them about the problems and the pain and the disappointment by not achieving that.
So they've got a trajectory in mind, which is a very beautiful over the rainbow scenario, and then you talk about how disappointing it would be if they didn't get there.
Right.
And so you're showing the implications. So the pain is the gap
yeah.
between their vision, which has no reality to it or substance in it,